Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. So before we get into the matter at hand, are there any questions just about the practice that we did today? Those who've been here before, those who might have been new, is everyone clear about meditative practice? Sitting, walking, body, breath, awareness, dealing with thoughts when you're meditating? Please don't be shy. It's important that we understand how to practice. Yes. How do you maintain what? What does that mean? See, we're not trying to maintain clear thought. See, this is... we can be dealing with this today. So this is the matter at hand, you see. How do we deal with all this stuff, right? Coming from the outside, coming from the inside. So that's the fundamental issue. Now, basically when we're in the practice situation like here, we're not trying to control. We're not trying to stop. We're not trying to manipulate anything. That's our usual strategies, right? We're trying to use mindfulness, awareness, to create a space within the mind that allows us to be aware of what's going on, but not to be disturbed by it. And as all of you who have found this morning, it's very easy to do that, isn't that correct? I thought so. It's a very simple thing. Right? But as you say, you notice, I mean, it sounds so simple. Why can't I just allow my mind to be open and spacious and let sounds and sights and thoughts just pass through like the sky, like, you know, space? I mean, it sounds so easy, right? And yet, we are just habituated, like you said, to endlessly grab onto. So even that insight that you had about your mind is good, you know, because you're turning and beginning to look at what's going on here. You know. And you're beginning to see there's a problem here. You know? Right? I just can't move around the world without endlessly fabricating. So, yeah, so that's, thank you. That was unplanned, but that was a good segue. So, I've not been here, I think, for 4 weeks, and I believe in the past 3 weeks, there were two talks by Darlene and one talk by Brian. And as far as I understand, what the themes were, the stories we create about reality and how they're not the same. Is that a fair, Darlene's here, is that a fair one sentence summary? And then lots of explanation and working with people, but yeah. So this is a fundamental insight of the Buddha and others, and is really the basis of, we might say, Buddhist psychology. And it is fundamental to our ability to live a life of happiness and ease and openness and spaciousness versus a life of constriction and endless emotional lability and drama. And right? It's like two ways of doing this life. And I think most of us, when we're conscious and we realize we have a choice, I think most of us would choose the way of happiness and ease and openness and spaciousness as opposed to the way of stress and constriction and emotionality and drama and conflict and struggle. And is that correct? Yeah, I mean, see, we need to step back and go, oh, yeah. You say, yeah, that makes sense. So what's going on here, you see? And all these things that I'm going to talk about are all very readily understandable by everyone here, right? You know, that is the wonderful thing for me around Buddhism, that it's not a theology, right? It is based on reality. It's the base of an awakened person looking at the reality of life, the reality of the mind, and really looking at what's going on here. Why do we suffer? You know, I mean, like, why do we suffer? Why can't everybody be happy and get along? Right? It's so simple. Right? I mean, why can't couples get along and families get along and societies get along? And I mean, why can't everybody just be nice to one another and take care of one another, right? Can anybody give me a good reason why not? You see, it's like, what's going on here? Right? So these are the kind of questions we want to begin to look into, like, more deeply, right? Because in a certain sense, it's you know, we get lost in the political and the social and the historical and the sociological and the but all of that is created by people, right? And what creates the actions of people? Their minds. So it is therefore this essential reason that when we're looking for what's going on here, we turn to the mind of human beings. And fortunately, since we are all human beings, we can do the research right here. You see, that's a wonderful thing. And that's really what meditation is about. Right? It's really becoming curious and interested and researching our own minds and our own experience to discover ourselves. What is going on here? Why? Not to write a great philosophical text or a self-improvement bestseller, but because we want to unlock the keys of our own capacity to be happy, to be loving, to be compassionate, to be patient, to be understanding, to be peaceful, right? As a human being. Is that true? Yeah, so what's going on here? We have eyes, right? Through our eyes and our seeing, we connect with the world. We're always seeing things, right? Sights are appearing to us. We have ears. We're hearing sounds. People talking, conversations, words, birds, babies. We're hearing, you know, all kinds of things. Music, we're hearing. We're smelling. We're tasting. And our body is sensing. Feels hot and cold, wind. You know, we have sensations in our body. Is that clear? So that's kind of the information that's coming in constantly since we were infants or even when we were in utero. We were receiving information, sensory information. Is that true? That's all that's going on. So our senses, and the interesting thing about our sense experience, it's always happening in the present moment. Well, you know, every sight, every sound, it's like blip, 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 right? There's all this sensory information that's coming in, and it doesn't stay. Just passing through. Right? Every moment's fresh, every moment's new. So what's the problem? What's the problem? Why aren't we happy? Why aren't we on ease? Why do we suffer? Okay. Because receiving all that information, all that real-time data from our senses, there's a couple of other things that the meditators in ancient days discovered. There is a sixth consciousness beside those five sensory ones, and that is the thinking, analyzing mind. Everybody know what I'm talking about? That one, right? That, the one you were talking about. You see? And that is, as opposed to our other senses, you know, like if you ask our eyes what our ears are hearing, the eye would go, what are you talking about? Right? The eye, I only have one job. I see. If you ask the ears, you know what the odor is, the ear would go, what are you talking about? Right? The ear is, they're all kind of unidimensional, but they're all connected to this mind, right? You see, and the mind is interpreting the data. Okay. It's thinking about the data that it's constantly receiving, right? It's kind of sorting the data. Is that clear? Because the data is just data. Right? The data is simply what's happening in reality. In the moment, what's happening? Just as a data, as a fact. We might say it's just a fact. Okay? So this thinking mind is constantly thinking about, generating thoughts about the data. Is that clear? But it's also, very trickily, there is a part of our mind that is unseen. In Buddhism, we call that the storehouse consciousness. This is important. The storehouse consciousness is where all the impressions, we might say, of, it's like a repository, it's a storehouse of the impressions of the actions of our body, speech, and mind, for at least this lifetime, if not more. Okay? And that is constantly, since it's connected to and operating through the thinking mind, it is often the sorting mechanism for the data and for the creation of thoughts. So what that means is we're not just taking in the data purely. We are endlessly sorting the data according to our storehouse consciousness and the formations in it. Now, everybody here has had a life, haven't you? You had a childhood. You had an adolescence, and I'll just keep going up by age, and you had your 20s, and your 30s, and your 40s, and your 50s, and your 60s, and maybe people here in their 70s, and even their 80s, okay? So we've been at life a long time, and we have been unconsciously sorting data according to those conditions of our life. Not from any higher intelligence, but from just the unenlightened mind of an ordinary person. Something happens and we interpret, we project, we create a story, all those kinds of words, right? So things go on in our childhood and we're creating stories and beliefs about ourselves in life. I'm a good person, bad person, the world's safe, the world's unsafe, people are to be trusted, people can't be trusted. Right? I'm lovable, I'm unlovable, I'm worthy, I'm unworthy. People like me, people don't like me. Right? You can trust people, you can't trust people. Right? See, that's all coming from where? From the storehouse consciousness, this core belief and these formations that we develop over time. Is that clear? Now, we don't know that because this is kind of at the core, this is kind of the unconscious part of our mind. We're just up here. But we don't understand that the mind is sorting all the current data based on past. That is why many of us find it so hard to change. Many of us find it so hard to even be aware of what's that the way we're organizing the information of our life has nothing to do with reality, but has everything to do with our past when we were unconscious, when we were just reactive. Okay, so it is, you know, I was thinking, you know, everybody heard, has anybody, we've all heard about fake news, right? That's like, see, what is, it's very interesting. Fake news means what? Yeah, that whatever the newspaper or somebody's saying, that's fake news. That's not real, is it? That's not what's really happening. That's fake. That's made up, right? Which is a little disturbing, right? Because for those of us who kind of have always thought that news is objective, kind of just giving us objectivity about what's going on in the world, to understand that even the news that people are getting as news can be totally fabricated and faked and made up. Right, made up and fabricated by people who have what? What? Agendas. Oh. So it's not only fake, but it's very biased by somebody who, right? Is that clear? Now, what if what you were hearing in your head for a lot of your life is fake news? See, it's very, I was reflecting and thinking, this is very dangerous times, you know? Because Buddhism has always said a lot of the internal responses and reactions and thinking is fake news. But now we have internal fake news combined with external fake news. I mean, it's funny, but it's really quite significant. You know, it's like we have to not only realize that many of the thoughts and the feelings that we're having inside aren't based in reality, but many of the messages we're getting from the external world are not based on reality. It's like you have to be very awake and very clear about what's the information you're receiving both internally and externally in terms of, is it true? Is it true? So, these mental formation, these conditioning agents are what is conditioning our thinking process. And so as we are, again, living our life, going through the day, seeing this one, that one, and we're responding, this or this, thinking this or that, we think it has something to do with reality. It has nothing to do with reality. It is our own projections onto reality. And depending on how distorted our views are, we are creating drama. From the most simplest things to the most complex things. Now, I left out one other part of this mind. So there is this storehouse consciousness where all the, again, impressions of our body, speech, and mind are kept, right? And then there's our conscious thinking mind. But between the two of them, there is this other kind of mind. And this is called the mind of self. The mind of I, me, my, you see. And what this is doing is, because the storehouse consciousness is just storing all this information and all these formations and all these beliefs and all that, right? But in its endless and this is a process that's just ongoing, this seventh level of consciousness, this mano-vijnana, this self-consciousness, says that everything that is happening, both coming up and coming in, is all about me. Like, where does that come from? Right? You know? Think about our life. We are not just living our life, taking care of business. There is this me that's always telling us, asking us, demanding of us what? To meet its needs. Right? Think about what you hear all day. What's it telling you? From the morning you get up to the time you go to bed, what's it telling you? What? Me, 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 me. Me, 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 me. What's today about? Getting my needs met. Getting my desires met. Keeping me safe. Getting me love. Getting me noticed. Keeping me, you know what I mean? It's self-concern. It's not only that our childhood stories are our childhood stories, but they're very personal, aren't they? Why? Because they're my story about me. You see? See, if somebody else had my same story, right? About my childhood or whatever, right? And were telling me they were telling me my story as if it was their story, would I feel the same way about it? Think about it. You see, if somebody told you, you know, really, I had a difficult childhood, my mother, my father left, right? You see, and if somebody else was telling us that story, we would be what? How would we be? What? How would we be if somebody was telling us a story of all the things, terrible things that have happened to them in their life, and the good thing, I mean, you know, we would be what? We'd be more objective. Wow. We would be, that's terrible. I'm sorry you had such a difficult time. You see, we would be objective. We would be open. We'd be listening. Yeah, that's... Oh, but when it's our story, are we objective, compassionate, understanding? Think about it. It's interesting. What's the difference? Both are past. My childhood, your childhood, all of it is past. Is that true? None of it exists anymore. For some of us, you know, everything that happened. Every day of kindergarten, gone. First grade, gone. Second grade, gone. Third grade, gone. Do I need to go through the whole thing? Gone, gone, gone. Every experience is gone. Every day in your home, every day with your father, every day with your mother, every day with your sibling. Where is it all? Gone. That's true for all of us. You know, we're all the same in that. It's all gone. It only exists as what? Memory, which is a story. A story with pictures. A picture story. How about that? But isn't that true? And, you know, that would be somewhat humorous, except it's can be a tragedy. Because we project that story about who we are onto our current life. We carry it with us. Last week, Angie and I took our grandchildren out for the week to the beach. We stayed at the beach, and we went to a ice cream shop one day, Larry's Ice Cream Shop, St. Pete Beach, quite something. You know, hundreds of flavors. I don't know, maybe it could be exaggerated. I mean, it was like walking into a candy store. But it was really like the Uber King, you know what I mean? They were like, you know, endless flavors. And you got ice cream and gelato and non-fat, and then, you know, then you could have it in every different, you know, and sizes and cups and malts and shakes, and you could even have it on donuts. That was their specialty. You know? And so therefore, you are faced with what? Having to make a choice. Having to have a preference. Now, inherently, if there are 100 flavors, inherently from the side of you of the flavor, does one have more intrinsic value than the other? They don't, do they? They're all just what? They're all ice cream, and they're all different flavors, right? They're all totally equal, right? So the liking, the disliking, the preference, ooh, wow, that's, you know, is all being projected by what? By what? By our minds. And we think there's something intrinsically good or bad in the flavors. There's nothing intrinsically good or bad in flavors. It's just conditioning, right? Isn't it? If you grew up in a certain household with a certain kind of food where everything was very hot and spicy, you think what? Hot and spicy is what? What? No, and, you know, tasty, wonderful. If you grew up in a home where everything was very bland, right? The person who grew up in the spicy home would go, ooh, that's terrible, right? And the person who grew up in the bland home would go, spicy, ooh, that's terrible, right? As if it's really is that. It isn't that. We're just projecting our conditioning. Is that clear? Now, that's fine. That's the way it is. But what happens when you think there's a rightness and a wrongness? There's a correct way and a non-correct way. There's, then what happens? Get a little tripped up. Get a lot tripped up. It's one thing to recognize that we're endlessly fabricating stories about everything that are based solely on our conditioning. Right? There's nothing intrinsic to anything. It's all causes and conditions. But if we don't know that, we can get not only tripped up, but we can get very rigid. And again, let's come back to the person. We are endlessly judging, interpreting ourselves, our own actions, and the people around us. Is that true? Based on what? What is our criteria? Think about it. What's our criteria? I mean, other than whatever we're judging the other person for, we think we're absolutely correct. Is that true? Yeah. Right? But what's the criteria based on? Yeah. But we think it's like it has some value. What? Well, we're creating our own suffering by our thoughts. That's the most essential thing to realize. What is the basis of my suffering? And what is the basis of my happiness? What is the basis of my stressed, rigid, tight, angry, fearful mind, and what is the basis of my open, spacious, loving, communal? What's creating it? What's creating it? We think it's being created by out there, but out there, there's just data. People are doing this, people are doing that. People are saying this, people aren't saying that. Is that true? It's just data. And our mind is endlessly organizing that data. And we think we're organizing it in some way. You know, it's sort of... it's like Google search, right? Now, everybody know what Google search is? Okay. Now, when we do Google search and we type in something, we think Google is giving us what? What? Yeah, the right answer, and organizing the information based on the most relevant thing to it, right? Is that true? Anybody who knows about this thing? What's going on? What's going on in as you search? Google is giving you what? What? Google is giving you what? Tailored information. Right? Based on what? Advertisers, I mean the whole thing, right? So we think the search is being organized in a very objective way. But it's not, is it? Could our minds be the same way when we process, when we think, that we're not coming up with an objective response to reality? The information is always being distorted by what? By our storehouse consciousness, by our unconscious thoughts, formations, beliefs about ourselves and the world. It's constantly doing that. And we think we're getting objective information about ourselves, about the world, but we're not. It's all distorted. And it's interesting. It's really sort of analogous. It's kind of fascinating how these, I don't know, what are they? Computer engineers? I mean, who's creating all this stuff? They're really mimicking the mind because they also do this other thing. See, what in Buddhist psychology, there's this process that goes on in our storehouse that's called perfuming. You know, like perfume? Perfume, like if you're in a room with somebody with strong perfume or cologne, what happens? What? Besides sneezing, you see, it gets into your clothes. You see what I'm saying? It begins to perfume the people around. You smell it. Or even if it's on you, you can smell it on your clothes. It begins to perfume. You put it on, but it begins to perfume the atmosphere, right? And so what happens is somebody does something. And you get a little irritated. Anybody ever happened to you? All right. Now, what do you notice can, if you're not careful, what could begin to happen? You might all of a sudden remember other things they've done to irritate you, right? And then you may start remembering other situations in your life that are irritating too or you're pissed about. You see, and before you know it, you have, because in your alaya, in your storehouse consciousness, you know, that one, as it goes down, is beginning to attract others like it. So you may be aware that often, many times in your life, or on your daily functioning, whatever your, you know, your go-to thing is, anger, irritation, fear, anxiety, worry, sadness, despair, hurt, you know what I mean? Everybody's got their go-tos, right? You may notice that it may start out with just a little incident, and before you know it, what's happening? What? What? It's out of, yeah. But see, what's that process, you see? That's what meditation reveals. What's that process? It's not like you're thinking, let me see how much other, you know, like, let me see if I can really milk this one, you know? And, you know what I mean? And just kind of let myself be really miserable and angry for the next couple of days, you know. You see what I'm saying? It's not like that, is it? No, it's like bump, ba bump, ba bump, ba bump. It's a very unconscious process. And that reminded me, because what happens when you're online these days? Right? You make a search, and what do you all of a sudden find? What's beginning to pop up? What? Related things. It's like, you're interested in this? Well, let me give you 25 of these, but also, let me tell you something that's sort of like that, that you may be interested in. Is that? You might also like this, or you like that video? How about maybe, you know, let me give you another 1,000 you might be interested in. And you like this product? Let me tell you. Is that true? That's like our minds. See, I think they're geniuses. But it's unfortunately with not a very altruistic purpose. But you see, that's what's happening in our minds, right? It's like unconsciously you start out here, and before you know it, bump, 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 every hurt, every resentment, bump, bump, bump. And before you know it, you're thinking of that girl in fourth grade, you know, just, you know what I mean? It's like, right? Or your mother, or your father, or your third grade teacher. It's all like, how'd I get here? Does anybody know how they got there? And yet we bump, a bump, a bump. It's like Google just keeps putting up information and we go, oh, that's interesting. Right? You know, when last year we were doing this thing on the nutriments, and we were getting people to look at their use of electronic devices, and I started reading some stuff, and it's like, the average person, when they go on their phone to, like, check a message, or, you know what I mean, or just, you know, like, you think you're going on, spends 17 minutes. That's average, right? Because you go on for one thing, right? I'm going to check my messages. I'm going to check. And you all of a sudden see what? 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 Notifications. And then what do you see? What? Other things. And then you say, maybe I should check any Instagram. You know what I mean? And gee, I wonder what's going on in the news. And boom, boom. You know, it's like, and then they give you more and more and more. And all of a sudden, what started out as just a momentary interest in doing one thing becomes, we call that distraction. We call that distraction. Right? Have you noticed when you sit in meditation, what happens? It's so simple. You're going to sit there and do what? What? Meditate. I'm just going to sit here and be present to my body, my breath, be totally open. Okay. I mean, what could be simpler than that? Babies do it effortlessly. So if we're not careful in our meditation, what begins to happen? A thought arises, and what do? Are we conscious and aware that a thought has arisen? No. We lose our mindfulness. And all of a sudden, what? Yeah, ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bum. And if we're not careful, when that little story or segment of something ends, what immediately will come next? Another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. And all of a sudden, Bill rings the bell, and we realize, where have I been? I sat down here a little while ago. I was just going to practice mindfulness of the breath, and I instead have been what? Just fabricating. Mind is fabricating, and I got distracted by it. I got caught up in it. I got lost in it. It became my reality. But if I said to you, in Buddhism we talk about consensual reality, sort of the reality just in terms of our senses that we can all agree on, might we agree that in consensual reality we're all just sitting here in the meditation hall on our chairs and cushions? Isn't that what's going on here? And yet, if there's 60, 70 people in the hall, is that where you were all the time? Where were you? See, where were we? If we were truthful, were we in reality? This is reality. This is the only reality there is. This is it. But our thinking mind is always fabricating another reality. Right? Well, which is the real one? See, that's very important to kind of go, which is the real one? Where do I want to live? That reality that you might have been involved in during the 30 minutes of meditation, how real was it? What happened to all those thoughts, all those stories? Where are they? Can anybody kind of put them in their hand and show us where they are? Let's say we want to share our meditative experience, you know, share our stories. Can anybody do that? Why not? Yeah, they're but they're gone. They don't exist in any real way. They just bump, bump, bump. And yet in the moment, they seem so what? Real. Like ice cream. Like the ice cream shop. So this ability to get that there is a reality that is I am present to by my senses, and then there is a fabricated reality of my thoughts that are conditioned by my storehouse consciousness, and they are not the same. And that the information and the organization and the construction of my life may be totally erroneous. Because it's all fabricated on the centrality of self and the stories, the past stories, the future stories, the present stories, that self, and along with the unconscious, is fabricating about everything else. It's like fake news, right? I mean, somebody was just telling me recently that there's technology that you can fabricate videos that look absolutely real. And you can have somebody doing something illegal, immoral, you know what I mean, all kinds of things, and you cannot detect that that's not the real person. See, they are beginning to do in consensual reality what our mind does. Our mind can fabricate anything, can't it? Right? It can fabricate a happy childhood, it can fabricate a miserable childhood, can't it? It can fabricate, I'm a wonderful person. It can fabricate, I'm a terrible person. Can't it? There's nothing holding it back. We can imagine a good future for ourselves. We can imagine a terrible future for ourselves, couldn't it? There's no holding it back. It can do anything. Dangerous if it's not grounded in reality. So in the Buddhist tradition, we have this very simple phrase, is it true? Is it true? Now, we're obviously needing these days to apply that to, you know, the information we're receiving, right? Right? Because we know that things are now fabricated. So you have to ask, is it true? Am I absolutely sure it's true? Is it really, is it true? But we need to do the same thing with our thoughts, our beliefs. You know, did they really mean to hurt me? Did they really mean to disrespect me? Is that what was going on? Is that true? How do I know that's true? Or am I just fabricating that? Am I just interpreting their actions in relationship to me, but it's just an interpretation? You know, maybe my parents were doing their best because of who they were and their causes and conditions, you know? Maybe their actions had really nothing to do with me. It was all about them. Gee, that's interesting. I thought it was all about me. You see? You know, maybe that coworker didn't say hi to me when I said hi because they're what? Having a bad day, or they're preoccupied, or it may not be because they don't like me, or they're not nice people, right? But can you see how the mind's endlessly, endlessly fabricating, interpreting? And if we don't, and ask ourselves, is it true about anything? I mean, are we so self-aware that we always know within ourselves what's going on? Well, think about it. Do we always know, you know, what's going on with me? Why am I feeling the way I'm doing? Where was that action coming from? Where was that response? I mean, many of us are totally blind to ourselves or confused. And yet we enter the world and we think we got the, we get the skinny on everybody. Right? Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. We know where everybody's coming from. Don't we? Based on what? I mean, are we omniscient? Please ask yourself the next time you think you know what somebody else is thinking. Are you omniscient? Do you have extrasensory power? Read people's minds. If you really think you do, you should open up a business or something. Psychic readings. And yet, how often do we think we know what somebody else is thinking? I know what you're thinking. I know what you're feeling. And we don't even often have a clue what we're thinking and feeling. So this fundamental willingness to understand that reality and our, in Buddhism we call it reality and our thoughts about reality, or the things that appear to our senses and the things that appear in our mind, our thoughts, are not the same. Does this flower call itself a flower? Does this flower know it's a flower? If you asked it, do you know you're a flower? It would look at you like what? What are you talking about? Yeah, flower. What was this flower stuff? I'm just this. Right? It doesn't know that we have ideas, opinions, likes, dislikes, preferences, right? I mean, whoever bought these flowers probably saw other flowers. and for some reason decided to like these flowers. Now, should all those other flowers be in like a deep depression because, because whoever bought these chose these? We laugh, you see? But, you know, how come nobody's looking at me? How come no one's talking to me? How come no one's choosing to be with me, right? Isn't that what we do? So this is very important. It's the key, it's one of the keys to our suffering. So let's stop it. Let's questions. I mean, this is very human, but it's essential that we see this. Reality and my thoughts about reality are different, not the same. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Being in
what?
Being in an abusive relationship. Maybe some, not that I am, I'm in a relationship.
Yeah. Okay.
But maybe she hits me. Okay. And I ask her if she won't.
Okay.
And she says to me, well, you know, you need to think about the stories that she's telling about what's happening.
Oh, well, I can see where you're going with this. So it's like you're taking it to kind of an extreme and saying, so does that mean, I mean, I'm like endlessly going, well, it's, you know, abuse, it's just my story. You know, maybe they really love me, and those are really love pats, and maybe I'm just distorting everything, and right? Okay, good, right. So you're saying, hold on, friend. I mean, it's like, you know, does it kind of move just to this kind of, you know, total passivity? I think that's what you're saying. Total passivity in the face of no. So that's good, you know. So, in reality, so since Dane is, at least David's in between the two of you, that's good. So, in reality, she hits you, okay? Okay? See, that's a fact, isn't it? Right? You see what I'm saying? That's a fact. Yeah, yeah. Now, even to call it abusive is your beginning to interpret what's going on. But the reality is she hit you, right? In other words, that is a fact. You know, if we had a camera on the two of you, everyone would see it. That's reality, right? Now, your interpretation of that reality based on your conditioning, you know, if you grew up in a home or if you've, you know, where that went on all the time, you might think, oh, that's normal, kind of normal interaction, okay? You see? But if you grew up in a home or a situation or your own life condition goes, no, that's, right, okay. So that's now you interpreting what's happening based on your conditioning, which is fine, okay? But the important thing to know is, see, if it's a healthy response, that's good. But a lot of people, their responses are unhealthy. But they think their responses are true because based on their conditioning. You see, to ask yourself, let's say you're over there going, well, yeah, I understand. I mean, I get irritated too sometimes. And I mean, what more direct way to let somebody know you're angry at them than to hit them? I mean, that's kind of it's such a clear message. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know. You see what I'm saying? Why beat around the bush, you know? See? Okay? But let's say that's not your response. Like, this is not healthy. Okay? This is not healthy. But if you had that other response, that this is healthy, you might ask yourself, is that true? See, we got to challenge our dysfunction, you know. How do we know that our responses internally are dysfunctional? Because they cause us suffering. That's all. They cause us suffering. What is suffering? Stress is suffering. Anger is suffering. Irritation is suffering. Fear is suffering. Worry is suffering. Jealousy is suffering. Envy is suffering. Sad, you know what I mean? We can go on and on. That's suffering. Positive actions don't cause suffering. Wholesome actions don't cause suffering. Positive and wholesome words don't cause suffering. So we, you know, that's our cue. Now, if somehow our capacity for even having a wholesome response has been really compromised, you know, that somehow we think when someone hits us, they're really showing us love. You know, that's kind of sad, isn't it? Right? Hopefully, you know, is that true? You know, so sometimes we have to go outside ourselves and go, well, in the world, is that true? Or is that what I do? See, sometimes it's good to turn it around, right? Is that the way I show love? No, I think, you know, if I wanted to show somebody that I love them physically, would I hit them? And you might say, what? What would you say, Daniel? Would you hit them to show them love? No, let's go. Not usually. And if you said to yourself, well, if I wanted to physically show somebody that I love them, what would I do? You say, oh, right? Or if I, you know, is it true that this is the only way to let somebody know that you're not happy with them? By hitting them, by calling them names, by belittling them, berating them, you know? What's that like when somebody does that to me? So oftentimes when we can't see it, we turn it around and go, well, what if that happened to me? Or how do I do it? You see, you turn it around like that. It's often very helpful. But the important thing is that self-awareness, that willingness to be aware and to look at the actions of our body, speech, and mind, and especially our thoughts, and go, are they true? Are they giving me a true picture of reality? Come back to meditation. Come back to mindfulness and the breath. What are we learning to do? Even though for many of us it's not easy. When we sit here in mindfulness of our body breath, what are we learning to do? That. Just what I was talking about. Oh, that's all that's going on. I'm breathing in and out. There's a sound. There's a smell. That's all that's going on. Everything else is just fabrication of my mind. It's not true. It's just endless fabrication. I don't have to listen to it. What are we learning in meditation? That's why meditation is so essential. We can hear these kinds of talks and get these kinds of ideas, but if we don't have something within us that allows us to have this self-awareness and objectivity, we'll still get lost. You need to ground. You need some kind of ground that you can look at your thoughts, your feelings, your perceptions, and be aware and know, you know, those that are in accord with reality and those that aren't. You know, and if we can't even be present to our own reality and know the difference between reality, between real news and fake news within our own mind, you know, how can we expect the world to get it? I mean, you see the problem we're facing, you know? We're sort of seeing on a national and international basis the kind of delusions of our own individual's mind being projected just on the world stage, right? Denial, fabrication, it's pervasive, isn't it? So, in our tradition, we begin with ourselves. Let me get myself clear. Let me, within myself, know the difference between reality and my thoughts and beliefs about reality. Can I even differentiate that? My ideas about the flower are not the flower. This is the flower. Anything I think about this flower, it is coming from my own mind, and I'm projecting it onto the flower. If you're in relationship with people, intimate relationships, personal relationships, collegial relations, familiar relations, do you really see them as they are? Or do you see them through your projections, your ideas, your needs, your wants? Ask yourself that. Do you see yourself as you are? You know, or do you see yourself through your stories about who you are? I mean, this is important stuff. You know, am I just a story? Like, I got a made-up story about who Fred is. Did this, did that, does this, came from here. Does... Have I reduced myself to just a story that I tell myself? When I meet people, do I authentically meet them just as I am, kind of open and naked, just as I am, present? Or do I meet people as a story? Let me tell you my story. You see? It's interesting. Are we really real with each other? Are we really real with the people in our life? This flower is real. There's no pretense here, is it? The flower has no story. It's not trying to get us to like it or not like it. It doesn't think it's beautiful or ugly, right? It's not bemoaning the fact that maybe it's spent the last couple of days of its life in public. So you know what I mean? It's not. Right? You see, it's got no story, does it? It's just here, being a flower. How wonderful. See the challenge that flowers give us? Can we be like them? Just be here with them. To show up in life as we are. We're all flowers, different flowers, grown in different soils, different conditions, but we're all just flowers. Right? Flowers, different colors, different sizes, different shapes, different longevities. But, you know, flowers don't look at each other like, what are you doing in my garden? You know, I don't think, you know what I mean? I don't want somebody like you next to me. See, they're just content to be flowers. But human beings, where do we get all these distinctions and judgments? Good, bad, high, low, wanted, unwanted. It's all just being projected by our thinking mind. Right? We're all the same. Every human being wants to be happy. Every human being doesn't want to suffer. Is that true? Yeah. Doesn't matter. Poor, rich, black, white, brown. Everybody's the same. They want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. They want their loved ones to be happy. They don't want their loved ones to suffer. Isn't that true? Yeah. Republicans, Democrats, yeah. Yeah. But we've lost that sense of who we are. Why? Label. I'm a this, I'm a that. I'm not a this, I'm not a that. I'm right, you're wrong. No. I'm right, you're wrong. No. I'm right, you're wrong. No. You know, I mean, it's like, right? Crazy. Yes. Yeah. No, you're projecting that story. That flower has no story about itself. This flower is just this. It is here. Well, it doesn't need, it is a flower. It's totally flower. It's 100% flower. It is what it is. It's not trying to be anything other than it is. You're who you are. And yet, for many of us, we have this idea about who we should be, who we shouldn't be. We're really not who we are. We're not just comfortable in our own skin. You see? We don't just live in awareness. We live in our stories, our fabrications about who we are, who we're not, who you are, who you're not, how the world should be, how the world should, right? It's endless. We have to see that that's what's going on. So this is not about, you know, taking a stand against, you know, what's going on in the environment or injustices. You know, that's all fine. But we have to, this is about like coming back to the basis, where it all begins. It all begins in the human mind, right? And then it comes out and manifests in the world. But it begins in the human mind, and that's where, you know, that's why 2,600 years later, there's still such horrible things going on in the world, right? I mean, why is that? Right? I mean, the Buddha came 2,600 years ago, plus Jesus came, you know, Moses came, Muhammad came, you know, they all, right? They all did their best. You know, why is it thousands of years later, we're still here, slaughtering each other, indifferent to each other, you know? Why is that? The human mind and its delusions, self-centeredness. Is that clear? Good. So good. So, you know, so I just wanted to give you, this is a sense of what sort of Buddhist psychology and how Buddhism looks at the human mind and human experience, and really what meditation's about. The calming of the mind and the stabilizing of the mind is just the beginning. Meditation is really about understanding and knowing your own mind. Why? So you can heal and transform it. That's what it's about. Okay? But you probably all knew this already.